We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Philip has just lost the respect of the Youth League football team he coaches. He was asked what New England should do in the draft, and his answer was objectively terrible. The Athletic just wrote a great article about this, but Philip doesn't have the Athletic or the respect of a boisterous group of 11-year-olds who once looked up to him. Learn from Philip's error, get the Athletic, and get the info you need to speak draft fluently.
Angie's List is now Angie, and we've heard a lot of theories about why.
I thought it was an eco move. Fewer words, less paper.
No, it was so you could say it faster.
No, it's to be more iconic.
Must be a tech thing.
But those aren't quite right. It's because now you can compare upfront prices, book a service instantly, and even get your project handled from start to finish.
Sounds easy.
It is, and it makes us so much more than just a list. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I. Or download the app today.
On the Wolfpack Sports Network from Learfield IMG College.
Play ball!
Welcome to the Nevada Wolfpack Baseball Podcast. Here's your host, Josh Sushon.
Hello and welcome to episode 2 of Howling with the Pack. This is a podcast about the Nevada Wolfpack baseball team as we tell the stories of where this program has been, where it's at now, and where it is going in the future. I'm your host, Josh Sushon. Well, in episode number 1, we visited with Jake Jackson. He's a starting pitcher for this year's team, and also his father, Wade Jackson, who was an infielder for the Wolfpack back in the mid-90s. Today in episode 2, we're going to talk to head coach TJ Bruce, and a little bit later we'll visit with former pitcher Grant Ford, who was drafted in the 5th round of the 2019 draft by the Pittsburgh Pirates. But we start with the head coach, TJ Bruce. And so, TJ, welcome to this podcast. Really looking forward to learning more about you and your philosophy and the players who have made up this program.
Awesome. Thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
So for people who know a little bit about your program or a lot about your program, I figured we would just start with kind of like an overview. So it's now your 6th year. And so you think about what you've done so far and what you want to continue to do. What would you just say, like, what's the identity? What does it mean to play baseball for University of Nevada? What does it mean to be a Wolfpack player and play baseball for you?
Yeah, I mean, I think the first thing that comes to mind is toughness. You know, it's just partly how I was raised, A, in my personal life, but B, in the baseball world. You know, I think nothing's given to you, everything's earned, and I think that's something that's special and unique in this 2021 year, especially as we're all going through different things. But, you know, I think that's the first thing that comes to mind is you gotta have toughness. And then after that, I think you got to get into so many other different arenas. Are you coachable? You know, are you motivated, and are you self-motivated? I think that's a big one too. It is, unfortunately, nowadays you're seeing quite a bit of people in general, not that they're not self-motivated, but everything always, if it benefits them, then they're self-motivated. And in a team game, it's not really, you will get yours if the team gets theirs. And that's our philosophy here in Nevada is you do got to be self-motivated. You got to do what's best for the team. And then in the end result, you will get what you're looking for. We believe if In fact, you do it that way. And then you get into the teaching part, you know, then you get into the development, you get into trust, you get into, you know, the five, you know, like we always like to talk about the five, you know, the five laws of learning, right? Is explain, demonstrate, participate, correct, repetition. And those are huge ones. You know, teaching techniques in terms of finding the problem and fixing it. I mean, that's part of our job in developing student athletes. And then the last one is, you know, really practice and training. You know, if someone were to come to the Wolfpack practices and or games, really, because they don't really, or BP, they don't, you know, as you see, there's not really a huge difference. I don't take it any lighter on game days per se. And but is there organization and efficiency? Is it energy driven? Does the training environment lead to game application? And I think those are part of the things that if a recruit, if he's looking for all that stuff, then this is the place for him. If he's not looking for that stuff, I would always say, you know, if he's looking for an easy street per se, then this isn't the place for him. This is a blue collar town. It's a blue collar program. It's a hard hat and a lunch pail type program. And that's how I believe is going to allow these players to not only have success here, but it's going to create long-term success for them. Whether they're dads, husbands, you know, in the work environment, whatever it may be.
You know, being around your program for now, 3-4 weeks, there's a few things that stand out that I want to kind of touch on. First one that immediately that I saw, and we do this everywhere. You get into the city the day before a game on a road trip, and you like to practice under the lights the day before. And then when you're done with practice, you tell the guys, we're going to roll up the mats. We're going to kind of treat this visiting park as if it's our home park. So maybe give more detail about what it means to take care of equipment, take care of cages, take care of mats, and roll them up on the road as if you were doing this at home.
Yeah, you know, I think the detail, you nailed it. The detail part is anywhere we go, we want to take it over as if it's our own park. And that's how it's always been. It's always, you know, the job before here, I was at UCLA, and that's how Coach Savage always was, is wherever we went, we're taking it over. So that means, you know, getting off the bus together as a team and walking into the park together, setting things up our way. We don't necessarily need the red carpet treatment. We don't need everything rolled out for us and put it in places. No, we'll set it up. That's part of the blue collar. And then at the end of the day is cleaning up what you did. And I think that's part of respect. I think it's, you leave things better than you found it. And that's part of how we do things here. And as you've heard, the message to the players is it's, this is our park for the weekend. It's not theirs. This is our park. And I think part of it's a mentality thing too, that, you know, we're not guests here. No, this is ours. And part of making it yours is cleaning up the mats, you know, the ground ball mat, folding that up. And then the other thing, like I said, the last parts are the respect part about the game is respect the opponent, respect their time. You know, we're all servant. And I think if we can have that servant leadership attitude, I think it's going to go a long way in life.
I spent a lot of time in professional baseball. And one of the things that I really love about college baseball is that when you look at the dugout at the end of the college baseball game, it's clean. In professional baseball, it's disgusting. There's sunflower seeds. There's tobacco juice. There is just cups that just get thrown on the ground. And I don't know where it started and why, but it drives me crazy whenever I see a professional dugout and how gross it is. But at the end of a college baseball practice or the end of a game, it's clean. It's cleaner than it was when you started.
Yeah, and that's that. There again, that's something that we have a thing called, you know, in this day and age, we're not taking one bus anywhere, but normally the message on the team is clean the bus. And it's all, you know, it's like sweep the shed. It's always everything you do is a reflection of you in the program. So I always pay attention, and you talk about recruiting early. I always pay attention to, like, recruits. Do they push the chair in when they get up, or do they just leave it? You know, they let their mom walk in first, or do they walk in ahead of them? You know, those are huge points to programs, and the dugout's no different. Is the dugout's our home, whether we're on the road or at home, and we need to take care of that, and we need to leave it better than we found it. And there again, it's a part of the overall picture. And I honestly, God, don't think they get it right now, but I know they get it in 10 years. And I know when they get into professional baseball, that there's a certain respect about them that comes from the University of Nevada baseball program that I want out there. And I know our kids like it. And I've heard many times of some of the guys in pro ball that how, not that it's easy, because we know pro ball is not easy, but their adjustment has been a little easier because of the program that we've run here. And then that means more to me than anything else, because that means you're making an impact on something bigger than yourself.
All right. So I got this idea, and I don't know if this is going to work. This could be a complete disaster, or this could be fun. Let's find out. But let's pretend like I'm a recruit, and let's pretend like I've got a big future, and UCLA is recruiting me, and Long Beach State's recruiting me, and you're recruiting me at Nevada, and you've come to my house, and I've welcomed you in the door, and you know, my mom and dad have said hello, and we sit down on the couch. Let's pretend like I'm a player. Like, what do you sell? What do you ask me? What do you talk about? How do you convince me to come play for the Wolfpack?
Yeah, I think number one, like I said, I said it earlier, is the toughness part. If you're, you know, and that's the number one thing I would ask is, you know, and then the other part that go with it is always about your family. I always want to know about mom, dad, brothers, sisters. What do they do? Are you involved in that? You know, that will tell me a lot too. That tells me about a lot of what you've been through and a lot of what you will go to. And then obviously I think you got to be able to give them the floor, and I want to hear them talk. Any program can spin it and make them look like anybody. But I want to hear them talk. I want to hear what they're looking for. Because we may find out that it's not the right fit. And I say that too all the time. My job during the recruiting process and our job during the recruiting process isn't so much to sell everybody on how great the school is. I think the school sells itself. It's a tremendous place. But my job is to make sure that they want to be here and they want to play at the University of Nevada. And that's what I want to hear from them. And so I do, I give them the floor quite a bit. I know our assistants do the same thing. And then after you kind of go off of what they're saying, and then you get into development. I mean, the bottom line is there's no staff in our league. That's for sure. I don't think there's a whole lot of them on the West that develop the major league players that we have. So if you want to get into that match, I'd be happy to stand toe to toe with anybody in the country on that. And then you talk about playing for coaches that, you know, there's one thing about talking about Omaha. There's one thing about actually doing it. I've been twice. I have a national championship ring. So I have what everybody's looking for. And so there again, if somebody says like, hey, well, I want to play for a coach that's been to Omaha. Well, okay. I got that box is checked. You know, and then you get into, and then I think you get into specific type stuff in terms if it's an infielder. Right, I have 8 major league shortstops and 16 years in the big leagues. So if you're an infielder and you don't come to Nevada, then I would question if you really want to be a good infielder. You know, that's part of the selling point. If you're a pitcher, okay, so you have, you know, you always get this all the time, right? The altitude. You've heard it in the PCL for years. Okay, so you're telling me that when the Rockies draft you, you're not gonna go play for the Rockies. You're telling me when the roof is open in Arizona, you're not going to go pitch in Arizona. Well, it's cold there. Okay, so you're not going to play for the Yankees? That's what you're telling me? You're not going to go to Boston? Or when the Yankees are in the World Series, you're going to opt out because it's too cold? You know, so that's part of it, right? It's kind of sifting through everything. And then, you know, like I tell them all the time, I don't want to convince you to be here. I want you to be here. Based on what we're going to do for you on the field, what we're going to do for you off the field. And we're going to make you a better man. And my message to parents too is they need to find a program that's going to align with how they've raised their son. I think that's such a huge, or what they're looking for out of their son in the next 10 years. And I think that is such a huge deal because this is a life decision. You know, a lot of people make this as a baseball decision, and it is, and don't get me wrong, but this thing's a life decision. I mean, your friends come from this. Normally your groomsmen and your wedding come from this time in your life. You know, normally the closest people to you come from this time of life. And this is a huge swing point in your life. And so, like I tell them, my job is just to paint the blueprint for them about how it is here. And then the other part is I don't want them to be here if they don't want to be here. You know, if mom and dad are forced them to be here, or if they think this is the right place for them, because if they don't want to be here and they're forced to be here, let's say, then it's a bad marriage. It's just going to end badly. It always has and always will. But I want them to genuinely be here because we do genuinely want certain types of kids. And then I think you get into the mission, right? What's the mission of the program? You know, we're relentless about the process. That's a huge deal. You've heard that a million times, but it goes back to Ken Revisa. It's all about the process. That's why practice is so important to us. You know, the games are the games. The games, for me, the games are the easy part. You know, it's the practice, the attitude, the effort, the pursuit of excellence. Like, what does that look like? You know, but today we'll do, you know, we do what we call a possum drill. We take 20 minutes out of our day. It's a mental game deal. And it's about reliving successes, but reliving failures and fixing those failures and turn them from a negative to a positive. That's a lot of stuff. That's a lot of things that go into a program that a lot of kids aren't ready for, or a lot of them are. You know, and I think the last thing, and here's what the last thing is, love. And I think you got to love the game. And I think you got to love the practice. And I think you just got to love what you do, because if you don't love what you do, you're not going to get any better at it. And that's how I truly believe. And it's whether you're in a relationship or whether you're in a job, if you don't love that job, you're not going to be good at it because you don't want to get better and you don't want to have a growth mindset. If you're in a relationship and you don't love that other person, then you're not going to sacrifice for that other person. And therefore at some point it's going to end badly. So that's a little bit of it, without getting into some specifics, but yeah, that's part of it.
You did say something that made me think of this question, because you mentioned about how, look, you go to college, you make this decision, and these teammates are going to end up being your friends for life, groomsmen at your wedding, best man at your wedding. So when someone comes to Reno on a recruiting visit, what is it about what your current players do to kind of help sell and kind of set the tone for, this is what it means to play here, and we're going to show you as a recruit, as a high school kid or a junior college kid, we're going to show you this is what it means, and this is the way you'd be welcome to this program.
Yeah, and the biggest message to our players is, and even to the recruits, I tell the recruits to get on the field and visit with them as much as possible. Get them one-on-one and get them away from influencing members. And here's what I mean by that. If I'm standing with a current player and the recruit comes, well, everything's going to be rosy. I don't necessarily want that, because sometimes things aren't rosy here. Sometimes things aren't rosy at other schools. There's good days and there's some bad days, but all in all, I think the recruit needs to understand that you care about them and you trust them, and they need to trust you. And I think if you have those two things, then it's going to be a good place. But I tell our players, make sure they know exactly what Nevada baseball is. Like I said, it's a hard hat, lunch pail type deal. And that's my going back to my playing days at Long Beach State for Coach Weathers. I mean, that's what it was. We were not the best type of players. We were the toughest, though. Now you mix in a few of the big leaguers like Weaver and Abe Alvarez and Tulowitzki, and I don't know, you can go on and on. Now you're pretty good, but what those players did have too is they had toughness. So now what you're bringing into that here is we're trying to build the same thing, because there are programs that have more than us. But there's one thing, when we tow the field, I take more pride in that our players have been through more. They've been prepared better. And so therefore, I think they'll be tougher more than not on the field.
I got one more question about this topic, then we'll move on to a couple of other topics. One thing that I've noticed over the last month is the number of Twitter followers that I have who are high school kids, who you can tell they're looking to get noticed, you know, that you can see in their bio, it says, you know, 21 recruit or 22. And so they're trying to get their name out there. I don't know why they're following me, because I can't help them get to a college. But for those types of kids who are out there, what is your advice to them in terms of this is, you know, this is what we'd be looking at if we were to look at you or somebody like you, your advice to them.
Yeah, I think, you know, a lot of it now is, you know, the showcase style format. And that's tough for me to evaluate. And part of it, you know, I can evaluate the swing and I can evaluate, you know, an arm strength across it. I can do all that. We all can, but the separator's the game. And that's part of it, right? It's the exit velocities. I don't know what that means. I still currently to this day don't know what that means. That you can hit the ball hard off a front toss, that you can hit the ball hard off a ball that's not moving. That didn't do much for me, because I know the guy that's towing the mound, you know, at USC, the ball's split in the plate. So can you lay off a pitch? Can you hit the ball behind the runner? Can you score the runner when the runner with the ground ball? Can you hit a sack fly when the infield's in on certain pitches? Can you go ball in the dirt? You know, can you play defense, right? I feel like that's a lost art too in 2021. So I think those are all part of the game stuff on what we're looking for. So I would encourage that if anybody was to send video or do video, do more of that stuff, more of some game stuff, and have some bad stuff in there. A strikeout. Well, why'd you strike out here? Because we can learn off of that, and they can learn just as much as anything else. You know, too much, it's the highlight videos of everything great. Well, as we know, if you're 3-for-10 in this game, you're going to the Hall of Fame. Well, that's 30%. So you're not very good from a percentage standpoint. You know, and if you're 25%, you've played a long time in Major League Baseball. A long, long time. And so we need to see those failures, and that's how we're going to grow. So that's what I would encourage some guys out there to just understand that the game isn't all about that. That's not how you're going to win games. That's not how you're going to win national championships, is extra velocity and all that. So I don't think it really goes into the college game a whole lot. I don't even know how much it goes in the pro game. I would have to get more involved in that side, but I don't think it does a whole lot for us.
All right, topic two this week, since our next guest is going to be Grant Ford. He pitched for you for 3 years, and I'm going to ask him the same question I'm about to ask you, and I'll be curious to hear, like, the differences in your responses. But you look at it statistically, there's a huge difference between what he had freshman, sophomore year versus what he did junior year. So in your mind, what did he do? What changed for him that allowed him to put up the numbers he did junior year and help you win a bunch of games?
Mental capacity. I hope Grant would answer the same, but I just think the mentality changed. And I think he ended up, you know, number one, funny you say that. Grant Ford just walked, is somewhere around here. I just saw his car pull in, but I just think, you know, number one, you know, he believed in himself. You know, he did nothing more than we were asking of him in terms of, you know, we always pushed him his freshman and sophomore year here, but just as much as we pushed him his junior. And then he finally believed in himself and got to that threshold that he knew he was good enough, you know. And I think some people always kind of think they're good enough, but subconsciously they're like, "Dad, I'm really probably not good enough." But Grant needed to believe more in himself, and he needed to show that he can overcome some adversity. And I think that's by far number one. And that's why I think he'll pitch for a while. He's going to pitch for a long time, and that's partly because he grew up mentally and believed in himself and how he can do things.
The fact that you just said that you just saw his car, he comes back, I think that speaks volumes about your program and about kids wanting to stick around. How much do you encourage, how much do former players come to the park, hang out, work out in the off season, get themselves ready before they start their pro career or their pro season?
You know, I always encourage that. You know, I think it's good. I think it's good for everybody. I think it's good, you know, for them, you know, cause they get sometimes in that pro lifestyle, and it's always good to have your college coach chirp at you a little bit about, "Oh, you're doing that now. Oh, you're a big pro guy," or this and that. I think it's good for them. I think it's
that'd great be good for the current players too, right?
I think it's great for our current players because they, you know, it's always, unfortunately, you know, you're always, when you're getting corrected or you're being demanded of some things, you always think you're the only person, you know, but the Grant Fords, the TJ Friedels, the Miles Mastrobonis, all these guys, you know, they can come back and be like, oh no, you know, now those guys had me my very first year, you know, not my sixth year. I've grown up a little bit since then, you know, so I'm a little, they would probably tell me I'm getting soft. You know, I know Mastroboni, you know, who's in big league camp right now with the Rays and having a hell of a spring. But he always tells me all the time, Coach, you're getting soft. You're getting soft. And I tell him I'm just growing with the time. I'm growing. I got a growth mindset.
Right.
But it's great, man. I love seeing those guys. And I think the message to them, if anybody would listen to this or is going to listen to this, is I love my time with those guys. You know, I was demanding of all of them, and I always will be. But, man, what they did for this program, and even the guys not playing, the guys are in the business world, what they did for the program, the program's always their home. And this is always one thing in their life that will be a constant. And they should, I would encourage everybody to come back. I know everybody lives different places now, and everybody likes to be closer to spring training or this and that. And so I understand, but you know, Grant Ford, speaking of him, bought a house in Reno and lives here in the off season. So I know he trains here and he trains somewhere else indoors. And so it's great. It's I love having those guys back.
When it comes to draft day, it's actually 3 days, right? First day is the first round, and then second day and third day. Do you have do you specifically make sure that you're near a computer, that you're near your phone? Do you try to get away? Are you ever around guys? Like, you have any kind of usual routine around those three draft days when you know that you got some guys whose dreams are about to come true?
Yeah, I don't know if I have a whole lot of routine during the day. It just depends who it is. You know, I remember going through one of my best friends when we were playing. His draft day was a year later, so he was a year behind me, or 2 years, I guess, behind me. And I remember just being on the phone with him during that time, and it was cool to live it. He lived in Northern Cal, and I lived in Southern Cal, so I wasn't with them, but I remember being a part of it, which was pretty neat. Oh, it was Jeter's shoe. Jeter came out with his shoe in 2005, and we called him the Draft Day Jeters. And so I remember we bought him like the week before the draft. And ironically enough, you know, he ended up playing for a long time and wore number two in the big leagues. And, you know, Jeter was his idol, and that was part. So that was cool to go through that with him just as a friend. But I think when you have former players go through it, it's special. And I think you always just want to see them and their reality, their dreams come true, I guess, you know, and see their dreams come to reality. And that's part of the winning culture that you're trying to create in programs too, is, you know, I've been to Omaha, you know, I'm not saying I want to go 12 more times. I mean, I'm not done with it, but I've been there and I've won a national championship. I want these guys to experience what that is like. I want these guys to experience what it's like to play in June. That's an unbelievable time. You know, the regional playoff time, it is the best time of your career, potentially, right? Maybe then when you're making your major league debut. But I'm just around the phone. I'm always checking. My wife or I normally are always checking, and or we're keeping in touch with the scouts or somebody that you have a decent idea where you think they'll go, and whether you're just giving them positive feedback and say, hey, they told me I was going to go in the eighth and now it's the 15th, and hey, stay positive. Things happen. You try to explain it to them as best you can prior to that.
All right. Last topic is just kind of at the time that we're recording this, your record is 6-8 overall, 3-3 in Mountain West, coming off a series in which you took 2 out of 3 from Fresno State. And just kind of give me your thoughts on 14 games into the season. Number one, what are you most proud of about what you guys have done so far? And number two, what's the area or two that you need to tighten up the most?
You know, I'm really proud of I thought we've been in some close games, and I thought we've come back in some games. And I think those are hard things to do. And so I'm really proud of that, how we've been able to stay in the game in doing that stuff. I'm really proud of how we've won some close games. You know, speaking of the game one, Fresno, you're down 4 runs in the seventh inning. I mean, now, those are hard things to do, and I think people on the outside think, oh, yeah, you know, why can't they do this? Or those are hard things to overcome. For an 18- to 20-year-old kid to mentally come overcome some things. Those are hard to do. And so I'm just proud of that. I'd like to see us be a little more consistent across the board. I think, as you've seen, we've left some games on the table. You know, there's no question. And I think most of it, I'm still to this day, I think we, you know, of our eight losses, we've probably been beat, I don't know, maybe three times. I mean, I'm not, you know, the credit, you got to give credit to other teams, but not when they're self-inflicted, you know, errors or walks, or we have yet to play a really, really clean game of pitching, defense, and some timely hitting, as they say. So once we clean up those things moving forward, then I think we'll put ourselves in a good position. I think with the conference records right now, I think the top three teams have three losses and we're in that mix, and everything's ahead of us. We do know that. So I know it's a long ways away. You got almost 2 months left, and you'd hate to say with 2 months left, you control your own destiny, but you kind of control your own destiny to a degree. And at this point, so does everybody else. So I think if we can take care of ourselves and take care of staying present and pitch to pitch and getting into the process way more than we are, and not playing the opponent, not playing the three letters across somebody's chest or the four or the five, then I think we'll be all right, you know. But I think until we do that, it's just going to – we're going to ride a roller coaster. But I'd like to get off the roller coaster at some point.
All right, TJ. Well, I don't know if I can get you off that roller coaster, but I can get you out of this wind tunnel, and I can get you out of this podcast. So thanks so much for your time this week. Looking forward to talking with you again next week.
Awesome, Josh. I appreciate it, and talk soon.
Once again, that was head coach TJ Bruce. We'll take a quick break, then we'll come back and we'll visit with Grant Ford. Just a couple of years ago, he was pitching for the Nevada Wolfpack. Now he is a professional baseball player in the Pirates organization. He's going to be heading to spring training here very soon, and we'll catch up with Grant when we come back. This is episode 2 of Howling with the Pack.
The Lexus ES is stolen, hijacked from dreams, taken from the souls of artists. We confess. We stole everything we could from everything we've ever mastered and put it into the Lexus ES350, ES300H, and first ever ESF Sport with standard Lexus Safety System Plus. See Dolan Lexus.
Not a substitute for safe and attentive driving. See owner's manual for details and limitations.
We continue with episode 2 of Howling with the Pack, and as promised, our guest is Grant Ford. He went to high school at Pioneer in San Jose, then came to Reno, spent 3 years with the Wolfpack, and in 2019, he was drafted in the 5th round by the Pittsburgh Pirates, made his professional debut later that season, and then, like just about everybody else in minor league baseball, was not able to play in 2020, and very soon, he's going to be heading off to spring training to start his first full season as a professional. Grant, welcome to the podcast. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you. Great to be here.
All right. So give us what you are going to be doing, what you've been doing in the last 2 weeks, and when you're going to leave for Florida to get going with spring training.
It's been a pretty much, I basically last off season had to simulate a season completely. And now I'm just working on building up, getting ready to leave for Florida on the 31st. So it's just kind of getting in throwing shape, getting ready to throw multiple innings when I show up in Florida, just being ready to compete.
When you say simulate a season, does that mean that you like go down to the park and find people to throw against and then 4 days later do it again? Or like, what did that mean to simulate a season?
So sadly, I wasn't able to do a lot of live stuff with COVID, and it was quite the struggle just to find a mound to be able to throw on. So I wasn't always throwing in the most quality places, but actually most of the time I was throwing with a wall, mm-hmm. with plyo balls or baseballs into a net, not even having a partner. But by simulated season, I mean I would throw one inning simulated on a mound as my bullpen, but I counted that as one inning mm-hmm. over the course of the year. And I ended up throwing around quite a lot. But it's just because you have to find some way to get your work in so you don't just completely lose a year of development. Mm-hmm. And that might be a separating factor with people once we show up to spring training, is it might be very easy to tell what guys have put their work in while we were off for a year and what guys haven't. So I want to leave no doubt in anyone's mind that I'm fully prepared to compete.
So when it comes, especially as someone who had just been drafted by the Pirates, you know, and they have what, 150, maybe 200, 225 guys in their organization. Who were the people that were in touch with you that you could contact so that you could tell them this is what I'm doing, or that they could give you advice on, hey, this is what we recommend that you do for your arm, for your legs, for your body, and all that kind of stuff?
So I'm luckily able to play in an age of technology. So I was in constant contact with one of my pitching coaches, Vic Black. And there's some bullpens where I would just have him on a tripod. I would put my AirPods in and he would just watch my bullpen behind me and give me feedback.
Wow.
So then it's the same way as my phone is my number one training tool. I record every throw, just playing catch with the net. I record everything. The biggest feedback for me is just visualizing. And there's so many players that have never watched themselves play baseball. And I think that's a huge mistake. Because you can't coach yourself if you don't know what's going on. Taking the season, actually recording myself, watching every throw, taking the fine details of how my body moves has been a huge help for me. And then just sending it to different coaches. Because I can have a coach that's in Florida and he can be working with me one-on-one like he's just right there in my ear. It's great.
When it comes to using the technology as your friend, is that something that you previously did, or is that something that you had to teach yourself and forced yourself to do during the pandemic?
It's something I've never been forced to really do. I've always had a coach beside me and he was my eyes. Sometimes I went back and watched film. I wish I did a lot more when I was younger. I could have been farther along than I am now, but it's something I had to kind of teach myself and be like, this is the only coaching tool I really have right now, because I don't have a guy like Vic watching my bullpen in person and giving me feedback then and there.
The other thing about technology these days is there's so many ways to learn a new pitch or a new grip, and there's the pitching ninja and all these great things on Twitter and on YouTube. How much did you spend the last year tinkering with grips or pitches to see if I can get the ball to move, just experimenting, or were you just locked in on what you already did best?
Oh, it was incredible. I have a core group of friends in the Pirates, and we all have a very similar mindset with each other. And after every single bullpen or whatever video we have, we send it out and we have a group chat and we send it to each other and give each other feedback and be like, ooh, that was a really good changeup in that video. What was the grip you threw with that? So it's a constant conversation with every aspect of training. So you're getting feedback from multiple sources, and you could pick and choose what works for you as the individual, but it's great because you're having so many different coaches giving you feedback. And a lot of them are your friends, and at such a high level as minor league baseball is, having those conversations is kind of crucial because you learn a little bit from everyone.
I'm blown away all this. By hearing all this, and it's really cool because, look, I've spent a lot of time in professional baseball and now in college baseball, and I felt like I had a pretty good idea of what guys were doing to stay ready during the pandemic, but I'll be honest, like hearing the idea of like having someone watch every single bullpen and then send it off to a bunch of teammates in an organization for everybody to watch video, like I'm blown away in a really positive way. And I think it just is a credit to you and your teammates in the Pirates organization for making the best out of a terrible situation here.
If you're not sending these coaches where you're at, how are they supposed to assess you as you've been gone? Or how are you going to show up being the same player you were a year ago? Because if you show up after this whole thing and nothing's improved, there's a big problem. And I think execs will be able to see it very quickly.
All right, Grant, we've been talking about what you've been doing here in 2021. Let's actually go back a little bit and then we'll mend the timeline. So you went to high school in San Jose at Pioneer High. You ended up playing for Coach Bruce at the University of Nevada. Describe what you were like in high school, what you were looking for in a college, and what ultimately brought you to Reno.
So one big challenge for me was I went to a high school that wasn't really known for being a baseball high school. I was the first Division I baseball player in 15 years from that school. So we weren't known as a baseball powerhouse. We didn't really have the quality of coaching to get players to the next level or have people that knew the resources on how to get players to the next level. So I chose to go play in showcases in Arizona, usually in Southern California, because Northern California doesn't have a very large scouting area compared to Southern California with the amount of talent down there. So I had to go reach out and find places to get me seen. Then once you show up to those showcases, it's all about you being in the right place at the right time. My coach always told me he's going to put me in a situation to be seen by scouts or seen by college coaches, but it is up to me as the player if I'm going to make an impact or impression on those coaches. So getting to the University of Nevada, I pitched at a showcase in, I think it was called the Fall World Series in Arizona, big time showcase. But our former pitching coach, Steve Bennett, luckily was able to see me there, pass the word on to Bruce. And then a couple weeks later, I ended up signing with them. I had them as a Division I offer. Then I had Western Oregon, which was a Division II, and I only went on two visits. And one was to Western Oregon, which I was actually highly considering. And the other one was Division I to University of Nevada. And part of that was because I didn't have very good grades in high school to get into these good universities or these very good programs. So luckily, Bruce pulled some string. I wouldn't say pull some strings, but I got into school by the skin of my teeth. Mm-hmm. And that's why I tell kids nowadays that are the freshman, sophomore, even junior years of high school, that grades are the most important, because it doesn't matter how hard you throw a baseball, how far you hit a baseball. If you can't get into the physical school, well, what's the point? And I'm not going to, there is the junior college route, which there's a ton of junior college, incredible junior college players. And I have a bunch of friends that play junior college, so that's not a bad route either. But yeah, get the work done in the classroom.
When I talked to TJ, I told him I'm going to ask you the exact same question that I asked TJ. And that is, when we look at your 3 years with Nevada, at least statistically, freshman and sophomore years, statistically, you know, junior year, wow, it really stands out. So what was it about your third and final year with the Wolfpack that changed for you, that allowed you to become the pitcher that you became in order to get drafted by the Pirates?
I will say my freshman, sophomore, and junior year, mechanically, nothing really changed at all. Nothing. The only thing that changed was my mind and my mentality towards not really even the game of baseball, but about my life. My first 2 years of college, I was a mess in the classroom. I didn't do very well in school. Then my junior year, I decided, you know what? This is important. And I straightened out my school, started getting A's and B's and having a 3.0 my junior year. Then suddenly my work cleaned up on the field. As soon as my other side of life got organized, my competitive side of life got organized. So they go hand in hand. You can't be a wreck on one side and expect to succeed on the other. And as soon as I realized that, I was a lot more confident of a human, because I was more prepared for situations I was not prepared before. And when I went out on the field, I wasn't worried about, shoot, I have a D in English. Is Bruce going to pull me off the field right now? I was more worried about going out there and competing on the mound. And I knew, since my outside of baseball was organized, I can solely focus on baseball because I wasn't worried about those outside kind of cancers.
So when it came to this discovery that you made, was it a gradual process? Was it just like one day? Was it something that you said to yourself, or that somebody said that kind of clicked? Or what was it that made you realize, I need to straighten up my act off the field in order to become better on the field?
I realized that my junior year, I was going to be a professional baseball player. I was fully confident that I was going to play professional baseball. So I was like, all right, Grant Ford's going to get drafted. But it was up to me how high I wanted to get drafted. So that pushed me. And I was like, it's up to nobody else. I have full decision of where I want to go. And if I want to be a high draft pick, if I want to be in the fifth round or higher, I got to clean up the rest of my life and act like a professional. I'm going to get where I wanted to be, not going about things the right way.
What are some of your favorite memories on the field with teammates, whether it's something that you did or something that the team did, some of your favorite memories of your time with the Wolfpack?
I guess probably winning a Mountain West championship. That was my first championship in my I guess, excluding like high school tournaments and all that, that was my first championship that actually meant something, that I actually truly had to work for. So that was huge. And just honestly celebrating after that championship with the team, there's nothing like that. Mm-hmm. And just being with the boys, there's a lot of things from college, and I see old teammates, I'm like, there's nothing like being on the field with the same group every single day and connecting. There's a lot of friendships that I'll have for the rest of my life from that college team, and it's just incredible. Then nothing can be Oregon State. There's something that fires me up about that. And yeah, that Oregon State, I love that series.
Do you remember your mindset going into that series with Oregon State?
Yeah, I knew there was a lot of people in the stands, and my mindset was they're going to know who Grant Ford is after this weekend. And that's just honestly that. And I was just there to rip people's heads off.
So I've never seen you pitch in person. But one of my favorite things on Twitter and social media is just looking at like the intensity of some guys, especially the relievers. And then some guys, it's just totally calm, right? Where you have no idea if they're up 10 or down 10. And then there's other guys that look like, you know, that they're maniacs. What is your mindset on the mound? What's inside and what are you showing on the outside?
It's honestly a controlled aggression, but it's still a little kid mindset. Like, especially once you get into pro ball, there's some guys making plays that you look behind you at, you'll give up 100-mile-an-hour ball up the middle and your shortstop will get it somehow. And you're just like, oh. So there's still that little kid in me that, like, you got to have fun with the game. That's something I also had to learn. I didn't enjoy like, you have to absolutely love this game. Once you do, it's the most fun thing. Mm-hmm. Even though you kind of have that psychopath mentality, once you see a teammate make a good play, you'll smile and be like, wow. So it's you still have that kid in you, and you can't take the game too seriously, because once you do, it'll eat you alive. I like saying, I mean, one of my favorite shows that I've watched is Ted Lasso, and he always says, be like a goldfish. I have a 10-second memory, and I love that.
Where were you on draft day when you got selected by the Pirates? Where were you? How'd you find out?
I was sitting in my college house with my roommates, my mom and dad, on a recliner watching on my laptop. Then my agent was calling me, yada, yada. But then once it kind of hit me, it was a feeling of, it kind of took a while for the excitement to hit me and be like, wow, that just happened. Because you put in so much time and so much work that you're like, I've earned this. So I kind of like, you're like, I've earned all this. I've worked my butt off to get to this place. So it takes a while to hit you. And it's a surreal feeling about a couple days later. Well, it's like, wow. Then it's like about a month later where it's like, I'm not going to be playing in a Nevada uniform again. And then that hits you.
How long from the time that you got drafted until the time that you reported to the Pirates? What were negotiations like? How long of a break was that?
I think it was about 2 days. Then I got shipped out to Florida. But yeah, negotiations went very well. It was pretty easy. My agent handled most of it. But then flying out to Florida, so funny situation is, I'm getting ready, packing and all this. I get a call from Caleb Foster, old catcher at Nevada, was also my roommate. He goes, hey man, you going to Florida right now? And I'm like, yeah, I'm packing. He's like, yeah, so am I. So I was like, whoa. He's like, yeah, I just signed a free agent deal with the Pirates. So we meet up in Florida, and my very first bullpen in front of all our coordinators and important people that you meet when you first show up was to Caleb Foster, a guy I've been throwing with for the past 3 years. So I was so comfortable, my very first bullpen in that minor league environment, that it felt like it was something I did every day. So it was an amazing first kind of experience to have.
So the Pirates sent you to play for the West Virginia Black Bears. That's in the New York Penn League. My first job out of college was actually also in the New York Penn League, not as a player, but as a broadcaster. So I know a lot of those cities between Batavia and Williamsport and Auburn. What are some of your biggest memories of the New York Penn League?
One, Batavia doesn't have Uber, so that kind of shocked me. I just seeing some of the balls hit, honestly, and when you're facing people, you're like, wow, you're facing kind of grown men now. Mm-hmm. Some big dudes. But yeah, the New York Penn League was a grind like no other. I mean, going from West Virginia to Brooklyn, that bus ride is not short.
Mm-hmm.
And then playing at a place like against the Brooklyn Cyclones, where there's 9,000 plus people in the stands and there's roller coasters going off in the background, you appreciate it, especially coming from a school like the University of Nevada, where it's a mid-major. The most fans I think I ever saw at a game was maybe 2,000. But then you get to these stadiums that you're like, wow, there's some people here, and I'm only in high A right now. And so there's that adjustment, and just the talent level, it's a big adjustment.
Yeah, also just as a Bay Area kid who goes to Reno and Mountain West, I don't know how much traveling you've done, but was that the first time in your life that you had been back east and to see a lot of these different, I mean, Vermont and Connecticut, plus upstate New York and everywhere else?
Yeah, besides maybe my D.C. trip in, I think, seventh grade, I haven't seen much of the East Coast. So, yeah, it's different. I don't know, but I'm a West Coast kid at heart, but I'm still learning the East Coast. I like it. I mean, it's nice having the Florida heat, I will say that. Going from the 40-degree weather in Reno over there is nice.
The other thing that's such a difference for professional baseball is, look, you play six games a week, if not seven games a week, as opposed to a three-game weekend series with maybe a midweek game. What did you learn about what it means to be a professional and that you're playing? I mean, as a pitcher, you're not, but just what it means to be at the ballpark every day playing a game as opposed to 3 to 4 days a week.
You improve so rapidly because you're at the field 24/7 with very high, like just a bunch of very skilled baseball players that know the game very well. And it's just simple conversations that are organic about the game, not even forced, that you learn a lot about pitching, hitting, just learning the game of baseball as a whole. It's faster. It's a lot more. And you also learn it's a lot more up here than it is in your ability. Mm-hmm. Seeing that.
You were primarily a relief pitcher with the Wolfpack. Your first year as a pro, you started 8 games. You pitched in relief 3 times. What was it like, that transition to becoming a starting pitcher?
Honestly, it was a little weird at first and kind of nerve wracking. I was used to that closer role, and I just love feeding off that 1-2 innings of energy. So I was still new to starting, so they weren't letting me push too far past 4 innings. But it is hard containing that controlled aggression and learning how to spread it across 4 innings and not just blowing out in your first or second inning. And learning how to face batters more than one time through the order, because it's very easy to pitch through the first 9 where they're not expecting too much. But after that first time they've seen you, you got to mix it up a little. And learning how to pitch rather than college, I would say I would just throw. I'd throw a hard fastball and a hard slider and get away with it. Now it's about how I'm matching that fastball up with my slider and with my changeup, changing timings. It's a lot more in tune of the game. And then having – you're in control of your game as well. You call your pitches. You and your catcher are working together. Rather in college, a lot of teams, your coaches are calling it. So learning how to – you kind of have to teach yourself how to pitch because you've never been responsible of how you're calling the game.
How do you feel like the change up and whether it's adding a third pitch or fourth pitch, how comfortable did you feel about that in 2019? And how are you feeling about having those multiple weapons going here into 2021?
Well, I never had a change up in college, which I was able to get away with. Pro ball, not as much. If you only have a fastball slider, guys that hit sliders well are going to eliminate your fastball, and guys that hit fastball well are going to eliminate your slider right off the bat. So you have to have that third pitch to throw in there to keep them off the other two. So I'm going to be able to experiment a lot more with how I mix each of my pitches rather than just being a fastball slider guy trying to beat you every pitch and trying to strike every guy out. I need to learn how to pitch and get deep into games. So that's one big adjustment. That's another thing, is just studying film, taking notes, learning players. There's so much that goes into it that people don't see.
When we were talking to TJ, he mentioned how that you're buying a place in Reno. So what is it about the time that you spend in Reno that makes you think, I want to set down roots here, even as you travel around the country as a professional baseball player?
Well, being a California kid, it's just not, it's not realistic for me to go back to the Bay Area. I can't afford a house there until I would probably be 40. Well, hopefully not. But like, I, as a kid, you can't afford to live there. It's not reasonable. Mm-hmm. It's sad because a lot of these kids coming from colleges across the country aren't able to move back home. But I love this city. It's where I want to like start my roots. It's just a fun place for me. I have a lot of friends here. I love the community. It's great. It's one. And it was also just a smart investment for me for the future.
And we'll wrap things up here shortly, but being able to just come back to Pacoli Park and be around TJ and being around former teammates or guys that weren't your teammates who are still part of the program, be able to work out at the field. Like, what does it mean to you to just be on a regular basis, still be involved with the Wolfpack?
It's everything to me. I mean, I legit gave blood, sweat, and a lot of tears to that program. I gave everything to them. So being able to have it as a place where I can come back and see TJ is huge for me. I mean, I threw a bullpen there 2 weeks ago, and that first time I stepped on that mound again, I almost started crying just because it was like I have so much memories, emotions. Just I gave everything on that field for that team, and I care a lot about that school. I have so much pride to be part of the Nevada Wolfpack. That in pro ball, when people say Nevada, don't fly. It's Nevada. But yeah, I have a lot of pride and I love this place. I wouldn't trade my experience here for anything in the world.
Well, that's an awesome way to end it right there, especially as we continue to pronounce Nevada correctly. So continue to spread the word wherever your professional career takes you. This was awesome, Grant. I'm glad that we're able to connect. We'll be following you very closely. And thanks again just for joining us here and sharing your story.
Thank you. It was very nice to meet you, Josh.
Once again, that was Grant Ford. This was episode 2 of Howling with the Pack. I'm your host, Josh Sushan. We'll talk to you again next week.